And now, it's time for Risk Radio Network with your hosts, Michael Honig and Michael Conti.
Risk Radio Network. I'm Michael Conti.
And I'm Michael Honig. And today, we have a special guest, Joseph Bosnak. Joe is a wholesale insurance broker for life insurance. So just to make that super exciting for anybody that doesn't know what that is, Joe is a broker's broker. So,
which means his golf handicap is 2.
I don't know about that. Is that true, Joe?
No, my golf handicap is not 2.
3?
Our topic today, and we're going to try to cover a lot of meat in this segment, but we're going to be talking about life insurance, which you guys know everybody's dying to hear about.
Oh, I know. Plug that in, right?
I know. That was just bad.
All right. You know, life insurance, I started selling life insurance for when a mother met. I guess we could say that because it's a true thing. That's where I started. They gave me the best sales school I've ever been to. But while I was going through the sales school, I just couldn't, you know, you're a 21-year-old, 22-year-old kid. You can't wrap yourself around dying. You can't wrap yourself about the responsibilities of being a parent, having a wife, having a house, having a mortgage. And it's you know, it just wasn't for me. And I kind of got over to the property and casualty side and loved it. But, you know, but today I'm starting, as I approach, you know, middle age, I'm starting to realize that life insurance is a very important thing. And it's kind of too late for me, bro.
And he said my dying joke was bad. He's playing with his middle age joke. But if I can jump in on you, Joe, before you entertain us with your rhythmic.
Not that you're going to get a word in edgewise here.
No, we'll let Joe talk. But I just think it's important, especially for brokers that are listening to our podcast. So since we specialize in property and casualty, it's hugely important for us to be working with an ally on the life side that really knows the product and understands how it works. And Joe is that guy. Joe's
a great resource. I mean, because I'll read everything there is about property and casualty, but I don't read enough about life insurance, and it's changing so much. I mean, when I took my license, literally, with one hand tied behind your back, you could pass the test. But today, it's so complicated with the introduction of variable products, qualified money, unqualified. I don't even know what qualified money is. I mean, to me, all money is qualified. I don't know what unqualified. By the way, if you have any unqualified money you want to send to me, I'll take it.
So Joe is really Joe's an expert in his field. I mean, he's got a depth of the products. He knows the markets, right. Which I mean. And I'm as comfortable with him on the life side as you and I are on the property and casualty side when we talk about where to go and what to do. So, Joe, that's the nicest thing I'm ever going to say about you from here on in. So, you know, take me through it. What's the beef here?
Well, I mean, it's a broad topic. It's a big topic. It's a fun topic.
Well, why do I want it? Sell it to me, Joe. Why do I want life insurance?
You want life insurance to protect the future, to protect your dreams. You want to live life and not have to worry about what's on the horizon for tomorrow. You know, one of the shames of life insurance is that the life insurance adoption rate in this country, meaning the number of people who are taking life insurance policies, continues to go down. And I am a huge fan of the product. It's socially important. It's well-priced. It takes care of people. It takes care of families at their most emotionally distraught time. I have never delivered a claim check where someone said, oh, you sold me too much. Yeah. They'll always say, I wish I had taken more.
Right.
Okay.
But what are the objections, Joe? Why are people not buying it?
You know, there's a few easy objections and there's the more difficult objections. Some people just don't see the value. Like Michael said, when you're younger, you're not always thinking about death. You're not thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow. I know so many people who say, not going to happen to me. I don't need to have this kind of coverage.
But I think it's also cultural.
I believe cultural, but there's also problems with it's a cumbersome process, which is also another part of the problem.
But I remember, listen, years ago, you know, I came up in Greenwich Village, right? I mean, years ago, you got a job. The first thing mama did was said, now go buy a life. I called the life insurance guy. He's coming to the house. You're going to sit down and get a life insurance policy because nobody had benefits. Nobody had jobs with benefits. Now today, everybody has a job. They get life insurance at their job. What do I need my own policy for? I'm wasting money. You're not wasting money. It's probably the smartest purchase you can make when you're 25 years old. You don't need that tattoo. You definitely need life insurance.
Yeah, but Joe, tell me this. I mean, because I always object. You know, when people say to me, I'm not worried about buying my own life policy, I get it through work. I work for this great big corporation. And I'll say, well, is this the only place you've ever worked? Like, no, this is my sixth job. You know, I switch jobs every 2 years. And I always ask them, well, are you taking your life insurance with you? What, like, did you take it from all the other jobs?
The answer is no. They can't take it from one place to the next.
When
they have a job, it's not portable. The other problem is you're also at the whim of the employer. Okay, so let's say you have a nice you're employed, and the employer has a 2x salary, and let's say you're making $50,000. So I have $100,000 life coverage. I'm fine. But next year the company runs into a couple of problems. They're looking to save some money, and the company decides we're going to lower the benefit to $10,000. That's totally beyond your control. This type of stuff happens all the time, okay? You have no control over the amount of benefit that you have. The other problem is people move around from employer to employer now. These are not portable benefits. So if you leave company A, you lose that coverage. And again, usually when you're negotiating your next job, you're not focused on the amount of group term life insurance. So you might walk away from $250,000 of coverage to go to a company with $50,000 of coverage. You're not thinking about it, but you're also not thinking about the possible ramifications for your family.
And, listen, you know, we could do a whole show on that, okay? Mm-hmm. But, people, like, my concern is that if I wasn't here to provide for my family, they were taken care of. Apparently, I'm a dinosaur because nobody really cares about that anymore.
I think, and I'm sure Joe would agree, I think the change in generations where people are not in such a hurry to get married, people are getting married later in life, there isn't that urgency that there used to be.
And yeah, but I get that. But, you know, yes, 100%. But let's talk about the ones that are married, that have kids. And you sit there and go, do you have something? Yeah, I get it at the job. No, you need something else. You know what? I really didn't like, I thought I liked this woman. I loved her at the time. But after 6 years, I really don't care. If I die, she should take care of herself. What do I care? You know how many times I've heard that in my life? It's nobody cares. And it's not the wife that I'm worried about. It's the kids.
You know what I found, though? And this came up recently. I think there's a lack of clarity for what people should do. You and I talk all the time that there's no class in high school and in college about how to deal with your finances, right, and how to balance, right, your check. Like everyday things.
You'll buy insurance for the rest of your life. You will take Spanish for 12 years, not speak a lick of the language when you get out, never use it again. You'll buy insurance for the rest of your life. You've not taken one insurance class.
Listen, I know how to order a beer and go to the bathroom in Spanish, so yeah. I'm pretty proud of that. Because as far as I'm concerned, those are the only two things I need to know. But I will tell you this. There are two great takeaways I got from my father. I mean, he's taught me a lot of great things over the years. Mr. White. when I first started working, I didn't really understand it. And he said, you're going to contribute to your pension plan. And money was super tight. You know, I mean, salaries, 25 years ago were not what they were today on starting salaries.
50 cents an hour, ladies and gentlemen.
But he said, this isn't a discussion. This is what you're going to do. And the other part of it was you're going to get a life insurance policy. I mean, talk about a drag.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm finally earning some money. You know, when I was working for cash at a clothing store when I was 16 years old, getting $5 an hour was the greatest thing. Nobody was taking anything. Now I got to contribute to my pension plan and buy life insurance. But I tell you, it was probably some of the best advice that I got.
Well, listen, who's getting that advice? Who's giving that advice?
Well, unfortunately, that's another big problem is not a lot of people are giving the advice. The producer community continues to age. The people that are selling life insurance, the old career channel, the New York Lifes, the Northwestern Mutuals are dwindling. Property casualty agents and financial advisors are backing off because of some of the processing problems, and there are processing problems. It is a bit of a cumbersome process that's not always well explained up front. So all of these factors are going into the declining adoption of life insurance. The carriers are trying to adopt. The industry is trying to adopt. They're offering more living benefits. One of the problems with life insurance
traditionally. But, Joe, hold on. Go. You see, this is the thing that most people don't understand on life insurance, the living benefits. I mean, it is, to me, one of the most important selling points, and we just ignore it all the time.
Absolutely.
So the living benefits.
Oh, I'm sorry. Could somebody just explain what
Joe's
to me?
Gonna, you know.
So anyway, living benefits that the carriers are now offering, you know, the traditional one that we do have some familiarity with is cash value.
Right.
And cash value does grow on a tax-favored basis. When you asked earlier in the podcast about qualified money is money in a retirement account. Basically, that's not subject to taxation today. It will be subject to taxation at withdrawal.
Okay.
So IRAs, Roth IRAs, 401ks, pension money is all considered qualified money, meaning it is not subject to taxation today. Non-qualified money is money in your pocket, money you've already paid tax on that's now in your pocket. There are a lot of restrictions, though, on the tax-qualified money to get into a qualified plan. There's income restrictions. There's restrictions on age. So what people use is life insurance as a supplement to qualified money. You want to put money into a life insurance policy as an investment where it grows over time on a tax-favored basis. So it's very similar to a Roth IRA, actually, because you're putting the money in with after-tax dollars, but the money is growing on a tax-free or tax-deferred basis, and then you do withdrawals on a tax-favored basis.
Wait, can I just ask a basic question? Because, you know, it's out of my depth on this a little bit. So would I come to you and say, look, Joe, I have this much money and I want to put it in a life policy, or is it something I could keep giving you money for every year? Can I call you up after I bought a policy last year and go, Joe, I have $5,000. Can I throw it into my life policy? How does it work?
Well, you know what? I don't have a problem answering that, but hold on, because I want to just boil it down a little bit, all right? Because everything you said about qualified and not qualified, keeping it simple, the Thornton Mellon routine, okay? Anyone who buys an insurance policy that has a cash value, whether it's qualified money or unqualified money, at a certain age can turn that cash value into an annuity, right or wrong? Okay?
Correct.
That's called a living benefit.
Yep.
We did that with my mother. She, every time that check comes, she's 91 years old, she says, oh, I have a wonderful son because I made her do that. Okay? So you don't have to wait until you die. So it can be something that you plan for as a supplement to your own retirement, right?
Correct. Absolutely.
So now answer Mike's question because he's getting angry.
No, I'm dying here. You guys are killing me. I lost you on qualified and unqualified.
Depending on the contract, certain contracts have more flexibility than others is the simple answer. So there are contracts that you can set up with a variable base, a fixed account base, a current assumption policy where you can put more money in 1 year and less money in the next year. And then there's more rigid contracts, which you're paying for guarantees. So there has to be a fixed amount of money going in on a regular basis.
Can you give me some like examples of cool success stories you've had, like with somebody that you sold a product to that this wound up being really beneficial for them?
Well, I mean, we can go back to the economic, hard times that, back in the mid-2000s, early 2000s, 2006, 2007, 2008. I had a lot of clients who were very pleased with the performance of their cash value life insurance because when the markets were crashing all around them, dividends continued to be paid, crediting rates continued to be paid. They had upside on all of their policies, only in the variable side of the market where they're hits. So a lot of people were very, very satisfied that they had put money away into these types of policies for many years prior to corrections.
I'm living proof of it, okay? I bought myself a universal life contract which builds a cash value back in, I don't know, 1980. Okay, that thing makes 5% on the cash portion. Okay, 5% is unheard of. And I could put in a maximum of, I don't know what the maximum I could put in, but whatever's not used for insurance goes into the cash value, and I'm making 5% on that. That's the best investment I have. And I have preached for years, insurance products are not an investment. Life insurance is not an investment per se, but it just turned out that it worked out well for me. And I know another guy, he's got a $1 million contract with a cash value of $800,000, and he's making more money in that than to take the money.
Listen, this is riveting, and I'm fascinated, and I have more questions, but we're going to take a minute break so I can I don't know, just run. So we'll be right back with Risk Radio.
I'm Michael Conte.
And I'm Michael Honig.
Thank you for listening.
At Honig Conte Perino Insurance, protecting your business is our business. Just like you, we're business owners in Manhattan. We're navigating constantly changing regulations, dealing with staffing changes, owning property, protecting ourselves, our employees, our business, and our bottom line. We understand what it means to run a business, especially in this city. Our doors have been open for over 100 years, and it's not because of slick sales. It's because we genuinely care about the people we protect, and that makes all the difference. When you work with Honig Conte Perino Insurance, you don't just get a policy, you get expert advice. A local firm who's been there before. A dedicated team who's looking out for your interests. See the difference for yourself by reaching out to us at honigconte.com. That's HONIGCONTE.com. Honig Conte Perino. Protecting your business is our business.
Welcome back to Risk Radio Network. This is Michael Honig.
And I'm Michael Conte, here with Joe Bosnack from Katz Nassau Agency.
Hello again.
Thank you, Joe.
So before, you two gentlemen were just riveting in taking me through. You know, you phrased this like it was going to be a fun Thornton Mellon time, and you took me through the Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, science teacher tract, which was just brutal.
Well, you know, us life insurance guys, we start talking life insurance. Watch out.
I'm just going to throw in my two cents because I want to get back to Joe's comments about these whole life contracts, universal life, and building cash value. You know, just not to forget, and I won't belabor the issue, that, you know, there's term insurance too, which I'm a huge fan of. It's inexpensive, especially for younger people. It's my pitch.
Short-term problems.
Short-term, you know.
Short-term insurance. Long-term problems, long-term insurance. Right, Joe?
That's correct.
But even to my kids, and Joe will talk about it in a little bit because I'm going to ask him to if he wasn't prepared, is talking about this concept of preserving insurability, which is you buy insurance, you know, when you're healthy, because if you wait until you got an issue, you're not getting life insurance. So term insurance is just a great option for maybe somebody young, doesn't have a lot of money, but they need to have a policy.
You know, Mike, I'm going to argue with you because nobody wants to hear it, but if you're 21 or 22 and you're thinking about buying insurance, buy a whole life contract. Buy a whole life contract. The easy way out is term. Buy a whole life contract. You'll be able to use that as a retirement supplement. You'll be able to use it for so many more tools down the road as the money grows. And you can't, when you get to my ripe old age of 52 years old, you can't afford to buy whole life insurance anymore.
Listen, as much as I think you and I should talk about, you know, physics and chemistry and all kinds of things we know nothing about, I think I'd like to hear from Joe.
Can I intercede for a second?
Because I think
actually you're both right. I think the best way to do it is actually to do a combination where a young person purchases a small amount of whole life that's going to get them some cash growth, it's going to get them some permanency, and term insurance to get them the maximum amount of death benefit for the lowest cost. Because remember, you know, needs change over time. So when I have young children and a young wife and I have, you know, starting out in the world, I need to have term insurance because I need death benefit protection. If something happens to me, I want to make sure my family is protected. Michael's sick of hearing me say this, but I say it all the time. If you have a machine in the business, in the basement that prints money, you would buy insurance on it. And yet the money printer, the breadwinner in a family, or in most families now we have two breadwinners, both should have insurance to protect the family.
You always protect the asset, right?
Protecting assets, protecting income. You want to protect income as well because you want your children to go to a good school. You want them to have all the benefits of what we work hard for, and to make sure that can still be there for them if there is an inopportune, you know, event that happens to a family. We need to have it. You know, you need to have that coverage.
Listen, I could jump in and say, you know, Joe, you know, I've known Joe a long time, and starting out, I just had a term policy. You know, it was probably before I had children. So the needs were a little different at the time, and I wanted to make sure. I'm sure I was married at the time by the time I met Joe. So I had a term policy. It's what I could afford, and Joe had explained the importance of insurability. But as I got older, you know, had children, you know, things changed for me, you know, business-wise, financially. Joe would come back. I mean, this isn't the kind of thing that you put up on the shelf. You know, it's not a product. And Joe has been telling me this forever. He's like, look, you may buy something today, but we should be having a conversation probably. It doesn't have to be maybe every year, but there are big things that may happen in your life. We shouldn't be waiting for it.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because that was the whole sales pitch on Universal Life, right? Isn't that exactly
yes.
it? Because Universal Life is a product where you can keep your costs down in the beginning, et cetera, and so on, build a cash value, and down the road when you're in a better position. So you buy a big policy, you use the Universal Life product, and you get there. You do exactly what you need to do.
It has to be managed, though. That's the key.
Right.
And one of the things that's also often overlooked in this discussion is policy review. A lot of people buy these policies, and they put them in a drawer in their office or at their house, and they never look at them again. And interest rates change, mortality rates change. There are a lot of things that can affect the performance.
Health
is another big issue. There's markets all over the place for new coverage. There's markets for selling policies. So there's a lot of things that can be done, but policy review is an important component
and
of this.
Joe, you know where that comes in the most, and you're going to love this. You know the story, right? So we started this business 10 years ago. It was worth nothing. We bought a $10,000 policy each just to pay the last bills that we would need. All of a sudden, 10 years down the road, we're pulling out major bucks, and we're now 10 years older. We don't have enough life insurance for a buy-sell, man.
Well, now we talk about some of the business aspects of insurance. You have buy-sell, key person, executive bonus. You know, one of the areas that there's a lot of concern with business owners today is their retirement. You know, years ago, everybody had a pension. It was guaranteed income. Most companies don't offer pensions anymore, so you have 401ks. The problem with 401ks is you have a limit each year to how much you can contribute. So you end up with having some limited funds for retirement when it's retirement age, meaning you have an account with a 401k that whether you have $1 million or $2 million or $500,000 or $200,000, it doesn't matter. Is it going to be enough? Is it going to be enough to maintain your lifestyle? So what a lot of business owners do is look to like cash value life insurance to supplement that retirement, to put cash value aside that if they run into shortfalls, they'll have it. We also have living benefits now where we offer long-term care expense coverage on a life insurance contract.
That's a great product. Joe and I were talking about that product the other day because it gives you the opportunity. What is it, a single-pay contract?
It can be a single-pay. It can be on an all-pay life contract, but you can get back. You can structure it where you get a death benefit, where you get long-term care expense, where you get cash value growth. There's products out there where you get guaranteed return of premium.
Right.
There's all sorts of living benefits.
Because I'm never going to die.
Absolutely. If you're never going to die, this is a good one to have.
Yeah, you know.
And you know, saying you're never going to die, that's an interesting question. That's where I think people also get frustrated with life insurance because they're like, which product is best for me? We talk about term. We talk about whole life. We talk about universal. We talk about guaranteed universal. All these concepts, and it gets a little overwhelming. But you have to remember is if I know when you're going to die, I know what's the best product for you. I mean, it makes it very simple.
Well,
okay?
That's true.
But since we don't know that, okay, that's why we want to look at the products that are specific to your situation and try to find the best mix to meet your particular needs.
And one of the things that I always tell people, though, is, and I agree with you 100%, but I have had the discussion where I say, it's got to be affordable too, right? It's got to fit in your budget because I tell them all the time, I get insurance bills at home. What do you think? I'd love to pay them. I hate to pay them as much as anybody else, you know? But it's got to be affordable. You got to understand why you're buying the product, what the purpose of it is, and you have to stick to it. And with that in mind, you can then look at the various products that are available.
Absolutely, 100%. You have to make sure that you have a budget in mind and, you know, an expectation of what it's going to cost. But again, I if the cost is the overriding factor, you know, term still works as well. We talk about the cash value products, but I would still rather have someone with a death benefit than not have anything.
So, you know, if I could just interject, Joe, because I think this is super important and people miss the point. I mean, I think people think about life insurance and they think about their immediate family and the need. And I'm confident that families understand how important it is, or it doesn't even have to be, you know, a family. Just if you are taking care of someone, or if it's your expectation to leave something to someone, life insurance is the way to go. But I think one of the overlooked parts of this, and Mike and I run into this with business owners all the time, you know, Mike and I are partners in our insurance agency. And one of the things that we did in the very beginning when we set up our agreements, you know, of course, you know, if something happened to him, you know, his family would inherit, you know, his half of the business. But it's not a practical thing. And it doesn't have to be an insurance agency. You could have a partner, a partnership or a group of partners in a hardware store. And there's got to be some kind of mechanism, because if one of those partners were to die, where's the money coming from? Right. Like, if a business is trying to operate, you can't expect there's going to be like, right, I'm prepared for the buyout right now.
Right. The family can't expect the salary has to, you know, the salary doesn't continue. If I'm not working, I don't get paid.
Well, I mean, if you're dead, I would assume that I'm not paying you.
I don't know.
Right?
I know some people that work that out real good, but but I'm, you know, that's the other thing. The business needs the liquidity to hire talent. So I'm the first one to tell you, I drop dead tomorrow, you're going to have to hire four people to do what I do. Okay. So you're going to need the liquidity to hire those people and to run the business.
Insurance has the answer. We do, you know, buy sell agreements, which are funded with, you know, life insurance. And we do key person policies, which are also funded by life insurance. So for someone like Michael, who's going to need four people to replace him, and the other Michael's going to have to pay off his family, we would set up two types of policies, a buy-sell and a key person. So the buy-sell, the proceeds from that would go to Michael Conti's family to pay for his share of the business.
Boy, you're smiling when you say that.
Yes,
you know?
to take his family out of the business. Michael Hornig will continue the business, but he'll also have some liquidity that he can use to hire the four people needed to... You know, and all kidding aside about the four people, one thing to remember, in most small businesses, the partners are the biggest generators of revenue.
You know, it's funny.
So if something happens to you, business is going to take a hit.
I'm going to jump off that, right? I have this conversation with people all the time with workers' comp, because they come in, right? They're the head mechanic in the garage. I don't need insurance. Take me out of the workers' comp. And I said, you're the dopiest person I ever met, because you're the lifeblood of this company and you don't want to be compensated if you get injured? Come on, you know, it's the same concept.
Yep, absolutely.
But you know, Joe, one of the things that I'm going to change it a little bit, but one of the things that I find now is, remember, my parents, we sold them a second to die contract, right?
Correct.
And at the time we did it because of estate purposes. That was the driving force of it, right?
Correct.
Now, the estate laws have changed tremendously since we got that contract. So I've been tempted to cash that in and run away to Rio de Janeiro many times when I see that, you know, bill come in the statement. But, you know, it dawned on me the other day, somebody said, what do you need the second to die policy anymore? That their estate would pass without estate taxes. I said, yeah, okay. They've been saving their whole life now, you know, to pass something to the grandchildren. If they don't make it to a quick and timely death, and we need to pay bills for people to come in and to stay with them 24/7, I'll be able to use that life insurance when it all settles to settle the money we took from what the grandchildren should get. So it's a good way of preserving the assets that they worked so hard to accumulate to pass to the grandchildren.
It's another great use of life insurance. You take a couple who's or an individual who's, you know, facing retirement, and they're concerned about, they have a limited amount of funds and they have a good life expectancy. They're concerned about outliving the money they have, right, and they're concerned about leaving a legacy for their children. We use life insurance in that instance as a hedge against it. So we take, if they have $1 million of assets, we buy a $1 million life insurance contract, or a half a million, whatever is comfortable financially. This way, they don't have to worry about spending down their assets. They'll still be a legacy for their, you know, grandchildren or their children or whoever, or a charity, which comes up quite a bit too. Right. People want to leave some money to a certain charitable organization. So all of these are proper and good fits for life insurance contracts.
So sum it up real quick because we're running out of time here. When people, they got to understand the product they're buying.
Correct.
It's got to be affordable.
100%.
And they have to know why they're buying it.
They have to identify a need, and they have to want to protect that need. But most people have a need. They should look into it, and they should be purchasing life insurance, regardless of what type they take.
And the big thing is, today I'm insurable. Tomorrow, I get diagnosed with, you know...
I get so many calls, and it's so sad. People want the coverage after they have the problem.
After
they've been told that there's a problem. And small things make a big difference to a life insurance company. Right. I can't go into that actuarially. We don't have the time. But things you think are minor do become an issue as far as insurability.
And let's do it real quick because, we're running out. But let's say, God forbid, you were diagnosed with cancer 5-6 years ago and you're a survivor. Are there products out there that'll look at you, or is it too late?
It all depends. I mean, I don't want to hedge against it, but some cancers you need 15 years out now before they'll even consider it. Some are 10, some are 5. It depends on a lot of variables.
All right, Joe, I got to say thank you for coming in, and we'll get you back another time whenever you want. You're welcome to come in anytime. I'm Michael Conti for Risk Radio Network.
And I'm Michael Honig. Thanks again, Joe. It was great to talk to you, and we definitely will
thanks
bring you back.
To you.
And Joe, tell where you're from real quick.
Katz Nassar Agency out in Rockville Center, New York.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks so much for listening. Have a great day.